Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, all. I am Glenn the Geek from cold, rainy Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, poor you, because I'm Jamie Jennings from sunny, gorgeous Phoenix, Arizona. It's not going to be gorgeous for long, though. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 30th, 2011, episode 108, sponsored by Back on Track Products. Good morning, horse world.
Guess what? It's Wednesday.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We have a show on Wednesday.
It's true.
It's time to go out to the barn. Let him out and work my arm. It's kind of like a meditation. Sort of like yoga, my religion. I get in a trance-like state as I pitch and as I race. The smell of manure and sweet grass hay. What a beautiful way to start your day. I'm 5 foot, but I never feel as tall as when I'm cleaning stalls.
Janie.
I'm glad that she likes cleaning stalls, and she feels nice and tall. I feel short and irritated when I have to clean stalls. Sorry, just me. Go ahead.
I know.
Good morning.
I think cleaning stalls is one of the things. If you don't have to do it every day, it's not too bad. But if you're the one who has to do it every day, then it kind of sucks.
That's what I'm saying. Being a working student, that was my main job, was cleaning stalls. I mean, that's what you did, and you did. And then the pleasure of doing stalls led you to maybe a riding lesson a couple times a week. So there you are. You're like, I hate cleaning stalls. I want a stupid riding lesson. I want to stop cleaning stupid stalls, and I want to go ahead and ride my stupid horse.
Well, if it's any consolation, you and I have a lot in common, because for horse husbands, that's our job too. We get to clean the stalls, because that's pretty much what we can handle. So we have a lot in common.
Ride. Yeah, you don't even get to ride. So
that's right. Hey, I am so excited today because our guest is so cool and kind of like a hero, because he has a really cool job and he does it so well. And let's give people a hint of who our guest might be today.
They're off. Twisted Heart broke well on the inside and goes out to the front. There goes Smithwick to the outside, and these two are away the best. They're followed by Ride and Shotgun, Deep Run Dune to the outside, and Lexington Ray as they make their way in to the clubhouse turn. And that's where they are, the clubhouse turn. And up next is the backstretch. And then we go on from there. But the quarter was 24 2/5 seconds. And the field continues down the backstretch. And Smithwick and Twisted Heart, they're going at it up front. Deep Run Dune is right there, Ride and Shotgun just behind them. And it's quite a scramble. I just made all that up. I can't see anything. sounded good, though. Wait a minute. It's a great finish in the Vosburgh, that's for sure. We just saw that. They're going around the turn, and it's Twisted Heart in front here at Monmouth. Smithwick on the outside, second. Lexington Ray is third. Deep Run Dune is fourth. As they make their way toward the top of the stretch. I think, 48-2, 3/4 1/13-3. Yep, they should be turning for home here. And they're coming to the top of the stretch here. And toward the eighth pole. And we have horses. Twisted Heart. 4-5. Still in front by 3. And Twisted Heart and Francisco Masonette love the fog today. Deep Run Dune was second. Lexington Ray was third. And then Wet Blanket.
That was that was Larry Colmus, who is the race caller at Monmouth Park. And it was so foggy that day. The reason he sounded, he couldn't see the horses. Basically, you could only see the horses as they were right in front of the grandstands. But otherwise, he just couldn't see anything. So that was his call. We're having him on today. And, of course, he's very, very famous for what other call, Jamie?
Well, Glenn, my wife knows everything. My wife doesn't know. Down the stretch. Of course they are. My wife knows everything. My wife doesn't know.
You haven't memorized.
I do. I love that. I love that, love that, love that. And I'll have you guys know that my wife knows everything, wins the race, because my wife doesn't know, shouldn't have won. My wife knows everything, should win.
He couldn't have planned it any better. I can't wait to talk to him about that race and about also just being a race caller at a track. You know, they have such a tough job. They're, you know, talk about thinking on your feet. We at least have time to plan a little, you know, and screw it up, you know, naturally. But, you know, he's on the spot. He's got 2 minutes to get it right every race. And talk about the number of horses and odd names. I can't say names anyway. I'd be a horrible race caller.
And they're so good at what they do. So it'll be interesting to get his perspective and to talk to him and see what a day in the life of an announcer is and how his life changed after the call.
Right, exactly. See if he got a raise, in other words. We'll have to ask him if he got a raise. Hey, Jennifer, what else, tell us about today.
Well, as you've already mentioned, we have Larry Colmus from Monmouth Park, race announcer. We're going to find out a little bit about how race announcers do what they do. That should be a great conversation. And it's Wednesday, so thehorse.com is here with yet another health report that may or may not cause Glenn to lose his appetite. And don't forget, all you Facebookers out there, we are depending on your comments to keep things from going completely into the dumps around here. So keep it up, folks.
Yeah, save me. Save me, because apparently I can't get through a show without insulting Jamie or making a fool of myself. So any help is greatly appreciated. Well, today's Daily Windy goes out to Natalie, who wrote on our website, "Congrats, Jamie. I enjoyed listening to you play the harmonica and guitar, and I loved it. How long did you say you were not playing? That rocked." So you said 10 years, right?
I think Lindsay corrected me, and it was actually 8 years. And I mentioned Lindsay because this is a long story, you know, but the Reader's Digest, as Glenn likes to say, the Reader's Digest version is, a friend of mine posted a picture of me and her playing and guitar and harmonica together on our Facebook page. Glenn saw it, called her without me knowing, got her on the air without me knowing, and then we talked, and he challenged me to play harmonica and guitar on the show, I think it was last Monday. So I did it. I nailed it. Thank you very much. And we just recorded yesterday our musical episode with none other than Lindsay Rakers, the girl that was in the photo with me. So she is actually a real musician, as opposed to me, who would like to have a couple beers and play in a bar. So she's actually gone on to record music, and she's really good. And we're going to do the musical episode. What day does that air, Glenn?
That's going to be on the 8th, next a week from Friday. So we'll be airing that on the 8th. Yep.
And Glenn loved it because then he got a lot of dating drama and BS about me and my past life. And I'm telling you, I'm on the straight and narrow now, Glenn. I'm a married woman. I'm a homeowner.
Chad's glad to hear that. It was fun. That was a great show yesterday. You know, really, Lindsay has nothing to do with horses other than her relationship with you. But we thought we'd do it just because you guys played together for almost a year. I mean, we could not do it, you know? And she has some great music.
Yeah.
She's a good singer. She's really good.
She She is. She's really good. So that will air next Friday after next. So April 8th, it will air. But I got to get down to the nitty gritty before you do your little sneaky thing. I have got to tell everybody, obviously, Zenyatta, not in full. I read the, I think to Rebecca, who told me to check Zenyatta's blog like ASAP yesterday. So Zenyatta's blog says, oh my, hello everyone. In life, we all have things that don't always go as hoped or planned. I am not any different than anyone else. At Lane's End, they did a recheck on me today and discovered that I am no longer in full. Just as with humans, horses also have this type of thing happen. I am feeling terrific. I'm totally looking forward to becoming a mom in the future. I want everything to be perfect when the time comes. With love, hugs to all. Z, Zenyatta. So, you know, this is what is an amazing connection that Zenyatta has to people, is so many women go through this kind of thing, you know, on, I mean, just millions of women. And actually, was when I was reading the blog, people can go on and comment underneath it, Glenn. And there was a woman that had commented, like, I am in tears right now. This happened to me 4 times. And you just find a way to relate to me every single time. And, you know, God bless you. I now have 3 beautiful children, so good luck. And it just, like, reading the comments of how Zenyatta affects other women and how she kind of brings all girl power together, it just, that's what it's all about right there. So, Zenyatta, we are sorry you're not in full. We know the next time will be successful.
Did you ever watch the show? This shows you how far the reach is for Zenyatta. Blew us away last night. We were watching, do you ever watch the show American Pickers? You don't watch too much TV. It's these two guys, two antique dealers, who drive around the country just picking, finding good stuff. And it actually is a fun show. It's getting huge ratings, and it's just a simple show. Well, they find these most inane places with these people who have been collecting crap for 100 years, and, you know, the places are just overrun, and there's dead cars everywhere. Well, they were out in California on the coast, and they were in Malibu, of all places, and there's this old guy with a beard and the whole thing, just like you would picture, in this place that's just overrun with crap, and he has like a ton of acres in Malibu. It's just this old guy who's collected all this crap for years, and he was wearing a Zenyatta hat.
No
we
way.
It was this old guy in the middle of nowhere. It doesn't look like he has left this place for 100 years. Was wearing a Zenyatta hat on the show. We went,
ah!
Jennifer went, is he wearing a Zenyatta hat? And I said, I think he is. He didn't have anything. His clothes were all dirty, and, you know. And we were like, he's wearing a freaking Zenyatta hat.
That's awesome. The guy hadn't shopped for anything, probably doesn't have a computer, but went on line somewhere to buy a Zenyatta hat. That's great.
Or he goes to the races. Maybe he goes to the races a lot. I don't know, because she was from California.
Ooh.
So.
That's true. That's true. Maybe he went to the track. I don't know. Oh, that's great. I would have freaked out. So, yes, Zenyatta is very far-reaching, and I just find it amazing how she continues to connect with people being out of the spotlight as far as the racing goes. So, love you, Z. That's why I named my puppy after her.
Well, speaking of connecting with people, I'm going to have a better transition day today. Speaking of connecting with people, we're going to do something we don't do very often, and that's we're going to do a Daily Winnie live, because we're going to call somebody that's not expecting us to call live. But this Daily Winnie really needed to be done in person, and I'm hoping I'm doing this right. Oh, do you hear ringing? Do you hear ringing?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, good. Then I did it right.
She's not going to answer because she's listening to the show.
I know, but we'll leave a message on her machine if she doesn't answer. We're on her voicemail.
Hello.
Happy birthday,
Happy
Jackie!
Happy birthday! Hi, guys. Thanks.
You weren't expecting
us
to call you live on. By the way, you are live on the air. I want to let you know that.
I kind of figured as soon as I saw Horses in the Morning pop up on my phone, because I do have you in my speed dial. So
we're
I had a feeling when I saw that what was going on, and yes, I was quite surprised.
Well, hold on. Our first live Daily Winnie to Jackie Baker of Regarding Horses blog. Happy birthday, Jackie!
Thanks, Glenn and Jamie and Jennifer.
I think you embarrassed her.
No, this is kind of fun. It's been a fun day. I woke up and I already had like 20 Facebook notifications, and my hubby did a good job and got me something I didn't even know I wanted. He got me an Amazon Kindle, which is way cool. And my coffee shop downtown told me to come in and get a free drink, and then you guys called me live. So it's like not even 9:30, and it's been a fun day already.
Well, cool.
That's great.
I have a message for your boss, Matt. Could you just tell him that I give you permission to go home for the day and take your birthday off?
I will tell him. I think he'll probably just laugh at you. But you know what? It's always worth a shot.
He's used to it, Jackie.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
And so is your hubby taking you out to dinner tonight, or?
Well, we are. We're going to go out briefly to Mexican, which is one of my favorites, but it's actually a youth group night at church, and we help run the youth group, so we're going to be running around with a bunch of teenagers, but that's kind of good because they always make a big deal out of things, too, so I kind of figure that'll be good.
All right. Well, happy birthday, Jackie. We'll let you get back to work
Thanks.
Before Matt gets mad at you. See you.
Wait, Jackie, isn't Facebook so fun for your birthday? Oh, my gosh.
Yes,
it's so exciting
ever.
To...
It
just makes you feel so good.
It does. It does, especially when you wake up and 20 people have already wished you a happy birthday. Because, you know, that's just awesome.
I know.
I love
it. It's way cool. That's why I always try to go on and comment. Bye, Jackie. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Bye.
See you, Jackie.
Bye. And comment on everybody's birthday, because when it was my birthday and everybody did that to me, I felt so special. I couldn't tell you who did it, but it was just like every single person on your list, it's become this like fun phenomenon. So if you don't have Facebook, do it just for the actual birthday wishes, because it'll make your day better, I swear.
There you go. And, of course, you can follow us and our conversations on Facebook at Horses in the Morning, and we just went over 2,100, so we're happy about that. And we're going to be making just a few little tweaks to the show. We're always trying to improve it and make it more fun and do more exciting things and have some things where we give stuff away. Well, we decided to tweak the week a little bit in that the Chronicle Poor Lisa was always on Fridays, and we know what Freestyle Fridays are like. So Lisa's now going to be moving to Thursdays at 10 o'clock. So the Chronicle of the Horse will make their appearance every Thursday at 10 o'clock. And on Fridays at 10 o'clock, we have something special planned for you. And we are calling that, what did we decide to call it, guys? I don't see it on my notes here.
We are calling it Really Bad Ads.
That's right, Really Bad Ads. Every Friday
we will
at 10
not
o'clock.
Confuse you. We are not going to confuse you with what the actual segment is about. It is literally about really bad ads, just really bad ads.
So we want you to find the worst Craigslist or online or newspaper, we don't care where you find, the really bad horse ads. It can be selling horses, it can be selling hay, it can be selling a farm, anything to do with horses. So we want you to find the really bad ones, but we want you to email them to us, because we want to hold them for Fridays. Instead of having you put them on Facebook, we want you to drop in an email to us, and we want to hold them for Fridays and read them to everybody and have a little fun with this segment. And I know, Jamie, you've been doing some homework on this already, and I know Jennifer was on Craigslist for what's been 3 hours yesterday goofing off, and I know that you both have a pile of ads already stacked up, but we want listeners, we want you guys to submit your ads every week, and there's going to be a giveaway every week, a prize every week for the best really bad ad. And this week, we're giving away a pair of Spursuader spurs, thanks to the Spursuader company, to Linda for providing those. They're valued at almost $50, and those are the spurs that Jennifer just loves, and I know that are pretty much the only ones you use anymore with Beaker, right?
Yeah, they work. Why change it? It's not broke.
Okay. So they're really nice spurs. They're called Spursuaders. They're kind of a blunt-ended spur, so they're not really nasty or anything. And they're just giving you that little extra oomph, and she was kind enough to donate this week's prize. We want you to mail the really bad ads to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. That's Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. And Jennifer, if you could post that on Facebook today, too, that we're looking for those ads and mail it to you. That would be great. So that'll be, get them in before Friday morning, and we'll include yours in the segment, and then if yours is picked, you'll win that week's prize. I think this is just going to be a fun little segment. Jamie just loves really bad ads.
Do you know how hard I've been working? I am working so hard on going through Craigslist that I've almost bought two horses. Because I'm like, oh, my God, I need them. And it's just really bad idea for me to search in my area. So I have decided that what I'm going to search is the states around me, so I am not tempted to go see a horse, because it has happened twice now where I'm like, oh, my God, I need him. I need him. I love him. So I need to not do that. So I've decided to search, like, Salt Lake City and Albuquerque. I've been looking through those.
I think I need to recommend that to Jennifer, too.
Yes, definitely. But, you know, just to add to the specialness of these really bad ads, I have also begun downloading the photos that go with the ads, because it is just shocking, the sale photos. People, are you trying to sell your horse at all? Do you want to sell this horse? Because the ads, like, one photo is, like, you know, the horse that's, like, half a mile away in the back of the pasture, and one horse, like, they're riding it, a bunch of, like, four kids sitting on the back of this horse, like, galloping around with no helmets. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is just terrible. So, yes, really bad ads. We'll also accept really bad photos of sale ads. The ad has to go with it, though.
That's right. So, and put that to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com, and then put in the subject line, really bad ads, so she knows that you're submitting that. And that'll be every Friday, so keep an eye on them every week and send them to us. We would love to be including yours from around the country, or the world for that matter, because I'm sure there is some really bad ads in Sweden and Australia and Britain and Canada and all the other places around the world that listen to Horses in the Morning. So that will be fun. I'm looking forward to that. And we're sort of going to do Mondays at 10 o'clock. We're adding to our lineup. We haven't come up with a name for that segment yet. But we're going to be going over the wacky weekend stories, the wacky weekend horse stories from around the world, and the rescue stories and all that kind of fun stuff we like to report on here at Horses in the Morning. We'll be doing that every Monday at 10. So we're adding new segments to keep it fun and lively here. Like yesterday wasn't lively enough.
Right. I'm kind of so mad about that. So let's
not
go.
Did you see what Alan just posted on Facebook? When are y'all going to have Willy Wonka on the show to plea for freedom of Oompa Loompas everywhere? Hope the song is still in Jamie's head.
Alan, I'm coming for you, okay? I am going to come and I will find you. I'm going to go to rodeos. I will stalk you. I will find you and I will hurt you. No, on a side note, I was online yesterday, and I found this website called StumbleUpon.com. Do you know what that is, Glenn?
Yeah, it's been around for a very long time, and it actually sold for like $2 billion. I think Google has it now. And it's a really cool site, yeah.
It is StumbleUpon.com. You go in and you kind of click on things you're interested in, and then you just click Stumble, and it brings up the most random things. Like I was interested in animals and horses and cooking and vegetarianism, all this stuff. And so, like, you just hit Stumble, and it pops up this website. Then if you like that one, you can say you like it. If you read it, then click to the next one. Well, I stumbled upon the greatest website of all time. And I find
all
it
right.
very important for everybody to go to this website right now, because if you have ever wanted to get me a gift, ever in the entire world, let's see, I'm going to post this link right now on our Facebook page. This is the cutest thing ever. Here we go.
I'm ready.
It is, okay, go to petitelapgiraffe.com.
Petite like small, lap like your lap, and giraffe like a giraffe. Okay.
PETITELAP giraffe.com.
Right.
This is the giraffe. You've seen the commercials where they're like, yes, I am so rich and famous and blah, blah, blah. And then he's got that little tiny giraffe sitting on a pillow. Well, I found the breeders for the mini giraffes. I found
that's
the breeders.
CGI, that's not a little, they don't make little giraffes. What are you talking about?
Glenn, it's a Russian breeder. They are the only, it says, welcome to the worldwide famous Sokolovsky Farms, the best and only breeders of petite lap giraffes. And you can
I
go on.
I think you're being punked here.
You can go on. Petite laugh giraffes are very funny animals. They require special care. They need hugs and kisses every day. Otherwise, they make tears. Now, this is a Russian translation. So they don't bite. They eat distilled. They drink distilled water and bonsai tree leaves is the only thing they eat. So they're kind of hard to feed. If you go down, you can see the pictures of baby petite lap giraffes. Oh, my God. So then you go on and you click photos, and they've got the mommy and the daddy, and then they've got another female cow. And then in tabs, they show the babies. And then you can order a baby petite lap giraffe.
I think you're being so punk, it's unbelievable.
Glenn, hello. It's a baby petite lap giraffe. I have to have one. I'll fly it in from Russia. I will fly to Russia to go get this thing. See, are you guys searching around the
I am, and I give you that they're very cute in the pictures. They even have a little video there of the barn, and I haven't seen anything in the barn yet. I'm just not quite believing this. If anybody else has anything on whether they're real or not, I just am not believing this.
There's a live webcam. It shows you the baby petite lap giraffe. Like, no, it's the bull, Vladimir. It says, oh, he's looking at me right now. See what our bull Vladimir do around farm. If not, see him.
Well, how come
he's
looking at me? He's not on my video.
We're in different time zones. Hello. Okay. Mine is in the dark and he's sleeping, okay? And he's the cutest thing ever, and I want him so bad, and I love him so much.
Oh, you know what? If you hit refresh, there's different views. You get the different cameras when you hit refresh. Oh, there is something that looks like a tiny giraffe sleeping on that bed.
Yeah, I might have been on this website for about 9 hours yesterday watching this camera. So, yes, you do have to continue to hit refresh. And all of a sudden, the giraffe will appear somewhere else. But right now, it's dark on mine, and he's sleeping, and I'm in love with him. I want one so bad. So, petitelapgiraffes.com. And Sokolovsky Farms in Russia, they're the only ones.
All right, hold on 1 second before we go any further. I am pulling up Snopes, and I'm going to look up petite.
Are you kidding me? Do you seriously really think? Oh, my God. Do you really think that these are real? Okay, never mind. I'm going to let you go through this. But if you click on I Want Giraffe, you click on it and it says, congratulations. You make 393,594,000 people waiting on list for petite lap giraffe.
I bet there are, too. I bet there are.
See, you would be gullible enough to believe that this is... Oh, Glenn, bless your heart. And that's a nice way for us Southern girls to say you're an idiot.
hey, guys, on my camera, the giraffe just made a little teeny-weeny petite lap giraffe poop.
No way.
No
oh
way.
God.
I didn't see no poop.
You're in a different time zone, Glenn. He made a little giraffe poop.
Yeah, you're in a different time zone.
All right, I want to hear whether the listeners believe in tiny lap giraffes or not. Who's with me and who's with Jamie? Alan Moorhead says even a mini giraffe would be taller than Jamie. Oh, he's out for war today.
What? Alan, geez. He's up.
Wow, I'm still not buying it. So I want to hear from the listeners. Post on Facebook, tell us whether you believe in that, or give us a call at 347-637-3238. Why don't we go to the sponsor this half hour, and then hopefully when we come back, we'll have our first guest. I'm so excited on the line here.
Oh, that's great. Now, does your horse have muscle problems in the shoulders or hindquarters? Is he cold-backed and difficult when he first goes to work? Then the back-on-track lightweight therapeutic blanket needs to be in your horse care arsenal. Back on Track products are uniquely designed with a dual capacity to help prevent injury as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries. So no matter what your type of athlete you care for, be it an experienced campaigner or a talented young prospect, we all have those. Back on Track products are essential tools you need to be using to maximize athletic performance and minimize injury and discomfort. So you can find Back on Track therapeutic products at your local retailer or online, and you can learn more at backontrackproducts.com.
Okay, I must admit, you do have me hitting refresh about every 5 seconds here on the Petite Lap Giraffe's website.
Oh my God, it's the cutest thing ever. StumbleUpon.com.
Right.
Awesome.
We want to hear whether you think it's real or not. Are you with me or are you with Jamie? I'm not buying it totally. So, what I am buying is our first guest is so good at what he does. He's one of the best in his industry. And we want to play you a little bit of the race call that he became so famous for. Here it is, the race call of all time.
They're off. Little Miss Macho had a bit of an awkward start. My wife knows everything broke well. Lady Mutata is up and on the pace. Rojo's Tune is out third. The wife doesn't know. Fourth to the outside. And Nalini's Hope is fifth as they move for the first turn. On the far outside, Little Miss Macho is going up after that tardy start all the way up to battle with the leaders. On the lucky side is next. A ground-saving trip for Morningside Heights. Late for class in Miss Tallahassee or in the back of the field as Lady Mutata leads the way to the backstretch. And Little Miss Macho is second through a quarter of 24 and two-fifth seconds. Rojo's Tune third at the rail. And then comes My Wife Knows Everything and The Wife Doesn't Know, followed by Eleni's Hope on the inside, five off the lead. 2.5 to Late for class. To the outside on the lucky side, Morningside Heights along the rail. Miss Tallahassee is last. The half was in 48 and three. Past the half-mile pole, Lady Mutata by a length and a half. Little Miss Macho is in second. After that comes My Wife Knows Everything in third. On the far outside, The Wife Doesn't Know is moving up and is now fourth and right alongside of My Wife Knows Everything. My Wife Knows Everything and The Wife Doesn't Know are moving together on the far turn, and they're coming after Lady Mutata coming to the quarter pole. Lady Mutata in front. Here come My Wife Knows Everything and The Wife Doesn't Know on the far outside. Little Miss Macho is fourth or into the stretch. Lady Mutata, My Wife Knows Everything. Center of the track, The Wife Doesn't Know. Into the final furlong, My Wife Knows Everything. The Wife Doesn't Know. They're 1-2. Of course they are. My Wife Knows Everything in front. To the outside, The Wife Doesn't Know. My Wife Knows Everything. The Wife Doesn't Know. My Wife Knows Everything. More than The Wife Doesn't Know. This Tallahassee was third, and Morningside Heights was fourth.
Yeah! Well, that was the best. That is the best race caller in the industry. We have Larry Colmus on with us from Monmouth Park. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. How are you today?
We are great. Did you ever think, after you were done with that you would become a worldwide sensation and literally, in our minds, the best race caller of all time?
Well, thank you very much. I don't know. It was so weird, just the whole setup of the race. I didn't even realize until maybe an hour before that those horses were really in the same race together. It never even dawned on me until somebody told me. And after it was over, I started to get a few text messages from friends that that they thought it was a cute call, and I figured that would be the end of it. And then all of a sudden, things started to blow up, and people started to call from all over the place, and it was kind of shocking, believe me.
I bet it was. in a race like that, I mean, first of all, you had a lot of luck on your side in that the race ended in the order it did. I mean, how lucky could you possibly get in one day?
Oh, no doubt about that, and it was... once I realized that those two horses were in the same race, my only thought was, just don't mess this up. Just, because the two names are so similar, just get it right and won't worry about it. And the funny part of the story, I had a friend of mine was visiting me in the announcer's booth at the time, and he was sitting in the back of the booth. And I remember, as the horses were making their way into the last turn, I could tell that the way that they were running that these two horses had a very good chance of running first and second. And I sort of glanced back at my friend and just shook my head like, oh, no. And here we go. And as it turned out, it went okay. And I got through the call, and I let out that woo at the end. And that meant I was just so glad I survived, and that's all I cared about at the time.
I bet you there are races with names. That's got to be one of the hardest things about your job is there are races with names that when you put them all together, you just don't know how you're going to get to the race.
Yeah, some of them are tough. It's funny, like the more difficult names are the easiest ones to remember because they're so hard, and sometimes it's the basic names that are tough. And so it doesn't bother me too much, except for, you know, maybe if you have a horse with a ton of syllables, you know, and involved in a stretch run. Like we have one that runs in New Jersey in the summer a lot named Prestidigitation. And I would say it's called the horse, you know, Magic or something like that. It's the same thing. But, you know, it's just one of those names that you're like, oh, don't get in a stretch run with another horse with tons of syllables, because it's going to be tough to get it all out. But, you know, it's one of the jobs you have to do. It's fun.
I bet it's tough, Larry, when all of a sudden you have a bunch of Japanese horses, racing horses from Dubai, and then you've got unbelievably difficult pronunciations at the same time. How much time do you practice these names before you actually just call the race, or is it like right before you do it?
Well, I'll look at the beginning of the day pretty much and just go through the program and make sure I know who all the horses are, how to pronounce their names, and if I run into any problems, you know, you always say Google is your friend, and I'll start Googling, and I've found a couple of handy websites for coming up with foreign pronunciations. I'm usually better with French because I took a lot of French in school, and I can get those out pretty well. But you know, here in Florida, calling it Gulfstream Park, you have a lot of Spanish names, and that's not really my forte. So I do my best to try to get those down and handle it when the race comes.
Give us a little French racehorse name.
Yes.
I want to hear a French racehorse name.
French racehorse name. Boy, you're putting me on the spot. Let me think. My favorite was a horse that used to run in California named Le Roi des Animaux, which is French for the it means the king of the animals, Le Roi des Animaux. And I love to throw that French stuff in there. You know, we've got just the pronunciation of one of my favorite jockeys, Julien Le Parrou, one of the best trainers, Christophe Clément. You know, so I'm kind of a Francophile. I really probably overdo it, but I enjoy it.
Keep doing it. It's kind of hot.
you have a cool job. But it's got to be difficult during a race. Do you have a big chart in front of you with the numbers and the names, or do you memorize it? How do you do it?
It's all a memorization process.
Wow.
When the horses come onto the track, I look at all the jockey silks. Now, different all announcers have their own way. You know, some of them actually color in their programs with the jockey silk colors, and I found that to be not helpful for me just personally, so I don't do it. But what I'll do is I'll study all the horses in the race until I have every name in my head, meaning I can go through the entire field looking at them without looking down at the program, and then I know that I'm ready to go. And you know, once the race starts, you do have the track program in front of you as a crutch, you know, if you have to refer to it, and you get good after a while, after you've done it a bunch of times, where people don't know that you are looking at the program trying to come up with a name, because it's you're able to do it in a fluid motion. But you try not to. The best way to do it is to not look down at the program, and you just, you know, look through a pair of binoculars and follow the action and tell people what's going on.
Well, you know, we played earlier in the show, Larry, one of your other races, and that was the Fog race that also has sort of taken off. That was funny. You did a good job with that one.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I enjoy Fog every once in a while because, you know, you can't be wrong. Nobody can tell if you're right or wrong. You just go ahead and you just call the race. And, you know, I've had a lot of fun with Fog races over the years, although they wear you out, because by the end of the day, and I know we had one day at Monmouth Park a few years ago where it was foggy the entire day, and you run out of material by the end of the day because you're trying to make up for the fact that you can't see any of the horses.
I like the honesty, though. I like the, and they're coming around the turn, blah, blah, blah. Oh, wait, I just made all that up. I can't do anything. Honesty is the best policy, Larry, because if I was doing it, I even on a non-foggy day, it would sound like this. And the one horse is in the lead. Wait, here comes number four. Okay, wait, here comes number six. That would be my exciting race call. So, you know, fog or not, make it up. It was so funny when you said that. Oh, my gosh, I loved it.
You have to, every once in a while, you have to have a good time, especially in adverse conditions.
Well, now, you started when you were 18 years old doing this. Did you grow up wanting to be an announcer or what?
No, the way it worked for me, my father was the fellow that put in the speaker system at a little track in Maryland called Timonium. And
oh, yeah?
I went in there with him to kind of learn his job. He wanted me to, you know, take over from him, and he quickly, you know, found out that I was mechanically incompetent, and that wasn't going to happen. And I just totally fell in love with racing. Once I got to the track, I'm like, this is what I want to do. This is it. And I just didn't know what. And I used to watch all the racing replay shows and do impressions of the different announcers. And one of the guys up in the press box said, you know, you should try to do this for real. And so I said, okay, that sounds like a fun thing. I was, you know, 16 years old or whatever at the time. And I just got a pair of binoculars and a tape recorder and just started practicing. And then one day I was right place at the right time. The general manager of Pimlico heard me practicing calling races and offered me the job as the assistant announcer, and that's how I got started.
Wow. And you've been doing it ever since, and no wonder you're good at this. What's the biggest race have you ever called? I assume because they probably use their own track announcer. I don't know how that works. For the Derby and Triple Crown races, do they use their own announcers or do they bring in announcers? How does that work?
Well, I've never called a Triple Crown race, but the way it works is the Kentucky Derby, Preakness, and Belmont, they all have their own announcer on track. However, they also have a network announcer for television, and Tom Durkin, who's the voice of New York Racing, he does that. So he'll call it for television, and the individual tracks will have their own announcer call the race. So I've never experienced that. The biggest races for me have been on a regular basis, the Florida Derby and here at Gulfstream Park and the Haskell at Monmouth. But probably, you know, thinking about it, I had the opportunity this fall, which was very, very exciting. The folks at ESPN asked me if I would go to California and call Zenyatta's last race in California for them. And I was able to do that. So what a thrill. I mean, I think everybody knows how totally amazing Zenyatta is. And to be able to go out there and call that race on, you know, for television was probably the biggest thrill for me. And that was just this past November. So, and of course she won, and it was just fantastic.
Now, did you get to go kind of meet her or anything like that after or before the race and kind of get to know a little bit about her?
Before the race, I did. That week, I was able to hang out with the people that do the ESPN show, and they took a couple of trips over to John Sheriff's barn, and I got to meet John, and we got to, you know, get close up to Zenyatta as she was doing a little grazing, and just watched her. Do her thing, and I've just never seen any other horse like her. Just the total personality that, you know, she has, all these quirks, and I was just stunned, you know, by her presence, because she's just in a class of her own. Like, she's not from here. Like, she's from somewhere else, another planet or something. And it was really a thrill.
Now, was that number 19? Was that the second to last race? Was that the one that was the last one in Southern California that you did?
Correct. Yes, that was the one that was at Hollywood Park.
The Lady Secret one? Well,
the Lady Secret
race. Do you mind if we hear a little bit of the start?
I don't know if you, I mean, do you have it?
Let's see if this was you or not.
What's that?
Well, we'll see here if this was you or not.
Yeah, you might have Vic Stauffer.
Yeah, that's not you on that one.
Yeah, that's Vic. Vic is the track announcer, and mine was on. If you went to the Breeders' Cup World Championships YouTube site, they might have it, but I'm not 100% sure. Might not be worth searching.
Well, I mean, isn't what you know that's got to be. I can see why that's one of your highlights, because obviously Zenyatta. We talk of, Jamie is in love with Zenyatta, so she is, we were talking about her earlier today, not being in full. She, you know, since this show started back in November, we've been Zenyatta followers and fans ever since.
Yeah, how can you not be? I mean, she's just absolutely amazing, and hopefully, you know, they can get her back together with Bernardini and get her back in full. That's going to be a real thrill to see a Zenyatta baby out there, and hopefully that'll work out.
Now let me ask you.
And you'll
call
the races.
That's right. I wanted to ask you what you think about the Triple Crown this year, the Kentucky Derby. Do you follow? Well, that's a good question. As an announcer, do you follow racing in general, or are you just there doing your job every day, or do you really follow racing and who's who and what's coming up and all of that?
Well, I obviously, yeah. I mean, I follow the national racing scene, and I'm lucky in the winter to be the track announcer here at Gulfstream Park in Florida. And Gulfstream's 3-year-olds right now are probably the best in the country, and we'll, you know, we're going to have a good chance. I called, in fact, a few weeks ago, Uncle Mo ran at Gulfstream, and I had a chance to call him, and he's obviously the favorite right now. He's going to go to the Wood Memorial at Aqueduct in a couple of weeks and run. But our big race is this Sunday, the Florida Derby, the highlight of the meet, and we have several really good 3-year-olds in there. Nick Zito's horse Dialed In, the horse that won the Fountain of Youth. His name is, in fact, getting back to the French names, we're changing the pronunciation of his name. It's S-O-L-D-A-T, and I found out that he was named for the French word for soldier, and I've been calling him Soldat, but it's actually Soldat.
I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't.
I've been reading that name, too.
Yeah, it's also the German word for soldier, and I thought that might have been, you know, what he was named after, but the owner said, no, we called him because his dam was a French name. So he's in there, and To Honor and Serve, who's a very nice horse for trainer Bill Mott, is in there. So a lot of the really, really top 3-year-olds are going to be in that race, and that will be a big determining factor on who one of the, you know, who the favorites are going to be going up to the Kentucky Derby in the first Saturday in May.
That's a huge prep race, huh? Because, I mean, those are all the names that are kind of, like, on the edge of going to the Derby. I read the Blood Horse, and every day there's a different, oh, this horse is going to the Derby, this horse is going to the Derby. At this point, I think there's about 40 that are going to start. So
yeah.
I think probably this is a little bit of is it a weeding out process that the Florida Derby is going to be, or is it just deciding who the favorites are going to be for the Derby?
Yeah, I think in the case of the Florida Derby, I don't think it's a weeding out process because all of the top horses in the Florida Derby have already earned their way run in the Kentucky Derby as far as their career earnings, which is how they determine whether you get in or not. And unless one of those horses runs really a poor race, I think you'll see, you know, maybe 4 or 5 of the horses out of the Florida Derby head to the Kentucky Derby. A lot of the other prep races are weeding out races where there's a lot of pretenders that are being, you know, kind of kicked out of there and you know, horses emerging as later stars to, you know, make their statement coming up to Derby Day. So I think in the next few weeks after the Florida Derby and then the Wood Memorial, the Arkansas Derby, the Bluegrass at Keeneland, you know, after those races have been run, we'll really get an idea of who's who.
Yeah, and of course, we're talking with Larry Colmus, the race caller at Monmouth Park and Gulfstream. And I got to know, though, we've had Mucho Macho Man's owners on here. You know, we're huge fans of Uncle Mo. Who is your pick? Come on, you got to tell us.
Well, it's early. There's no doubt about that. But I'll tell you what, and you mentioned Mucho Macho Man. I am really, really impressed with him. And his trainer, Kathy Ripo, is terrific. And the owner, what a neat guy he is, too. But Mucho Macho Man, I had a chance to watch him. I was at the track on a Saturday morning, and they were doing workouts. And I had a chance to watch him and just to see how he just was gliding over the track very impressively. Now, he lost his last race in the Louisiana Derby, but he had a very legitimate excuse. He lost one of his front shoes right at the start of the race, so you can't really hold that against him. And if I had to come up with the, you know, my my early pick for the Derby, I think it might be Mucho Macho Man.
I'm telling you, Larry, my horse will not take three steps if he loses a shoe. This horse is a monster. I mean,
yeah,
ran the entire race with a he just really is, and I think he's great, and we love the owners. Funny story, we just had the owners on, and they told us that the reason that they got into horse racing is because she was in the gym in the Turks and the Caicos or something, like on vacation, and she met this other lady on a treadmill, and they started talking about horses. That night, the guys got drunk, and they started, well, she didn't say that. They started drinking and talking, and then by the end of the conversation, they were buying racehorses together.
That's
so
great. That's a cool story, and I don't know if you ever heard the story. His jockey, Abar Koa, was very seriously injured in a spill at Gulfstream Park and was unable to ride the horse after that. And when the horse, Mucho Macho Man, won the Risen Star Stakes, the owner went to Abar Koa's hospital room and he gave him the amount of money he would have won had he ridden the horse, which was $18,000. And he gave him a check for that.
Oh,
and it just shows what a class act he is, because he had to pay the full jockey's fee twice to, you know, to the guy that actually rode him into to Abar Koa, who by the way, I don't know if folks have been hearing about him. He was injured very badly. In fact, they thought that he would be paralyzed, and he's actually had a chance to see him yesterday. He's starting to walk again, which is just fantastic news. And he wants to be a jockey again and ride, and that would be an amazing story if he can do that.
Well, Larry,
yeah.
we appreciate you being on with us. I have two favors to ask. One is we're doing a special Kentucky Derby, because we're here in Lexington, Kentucky. We're doing a special Kentucky Derby pre-show the week before. Would you join us if you're free that week on that show?
Sure. If the timing works out, yeah, I'd like to do that with you. That would be nice.
All right, cool. And the second thing is, if Jamie and I ever get by your park, can we sit in and watch you call a race or two?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
All right.
I enjoy when folks come up and watch. Just don't, just don't try to mess me up, you know, yell in the background or anything like that, you know.
Okay.
We're going to tickle you.
Fine. We'll have to be
good.
Yeah,
that's okay. That won't bother me.
Tickling's good. Depends who's doing the tickling, right, Larry?
No problem at all. Yeah, I can get through that.
Oh, God.
Thank you, Larry. We so appreciate you being on with us today.
No problem. Nice talking with you.
What a good guy. You know, I never thought about the fact that the announcers probably know more of the backstories and just about everything about what's going on at their parks. They know the real stories about what's going on. They're the ones in the know.
Wouldn't that be hilarious? Oh, yeah, they definitely do, to, like, be calling a race and somebody walks up behind you and starts tickling you. What would you do? Because I am ridiculously ticklish in my rib cage, so I don't know why I thought of that. I just did.
Well, I'll tell you what. I thought that it's only appropriate, all this race talk and having a cool guy like him on, that we had to play a song done by Templeton Thompson for Barbaro called I Love to Run. We'll be back after that to talk about hay.
Whole life led me to this moment. I laid all out on the line. Time to shine, time to rock and roll. Feeling a million butterflies. Oh, but I've never been so ready. Watch me when I hit my stride. Feet alive. Yeah, I'm strong and I'm have my number. Ain't no need to be afraid. I'll escape from the cloud I'm under. Dying in for the fame or the pain or the so-called glory. I'm just living how I'm made. That's what they'll say when they tell my story.
Sweetheart, that is Templeton Thompson. You can buy all of her music at templetonthompson.com. You are listening to Horses in the Morning, brought to you today by Back on Track Products. I am Glenn the Geek, and of course, I am here with Jamie Jennings and Jennifer H. as well. Jamie, do you remember, did you ever watch Seinfeld?
Oh my gosh, of course.
Okay, do you remember the scene where, well, the one of many scenes, that they were sitting in the diner, where, what's her name? What was the girl's name on Seinfeld?
Elaine.
Sitting there, and she goes, fake. One of my favorite scenes of all time in Seinfeld, fake. And that's what the listeners seem to think about your little tiny giraffes. Fake.
That was a long way around to get to what you were trying to say. However, I want to see how many people, first of all, okay, Rick Conley does research on where the website is registered to go by.
By the way, it's an advertising company in New York, not Russia.
Of course. People, have you ever seen a tiny mini baby giraffe? Really? I'm not an idiot. I just really wish they were real, and I want one so bad. I'm like Cassandra wrote, yes, I wish they were real. Everything is cuter and miniature. So when we girls get excited about something being cute, we talk really high. So look how cute he is. Oh, my God. I love him. Of course it's not real, people. Gosh, have you ever seen a baby mini giraffe?
I got in trouble yesterday for referring to Oompa Loompas. I mean, hello?
Dude, are you seriously
not real
gonna
either.
The Oompa Loompa thing again? Because you offended all of our Oompa Loompa listeners yesterday already. But if the giraffes were real people, I absolutely would have one. And I think it's funny that Alan Moorhead goes, oh, there's only 400,000 people on the waiting list for a petite giraffe. Well, he must have gone on and clicked, I want one, because then that's when the number pops up. So he wanted one, too. How many of you people clicked on it because you want one? Just in case it is real, you wanted to be on that list.
I got to tell you, I've been wanting a new Greyhound, as you know, and Jennifer won't let me have one because she's mean. But, you know, I think she would concede to a tiny little giraffe in the house. I really think she would. Can you? What do you think the beast would think of a little giraffe in the house?
All I know is that the picture that is posted on Facebook is the cutest thing ever, and I would not let the beast anywhere near him in case he was trying to eat him.
Oh, can you imagine? Beast would have so much fun.
He clamped onto his neck the whole time. All right, it is time.
I want one.
For our Wednesday segment, which we have a new bumper for. Listen to this, Christy.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and Christy's attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
I love it. I love it. You guys are going to push me to new heights of grossing Glenn out. This is awesome. And unfortunately, it's not going to occur this week, but we'll try to make it happen.
Hey,
I know.
You have something I can actually talk about this week. Yay.
Oh, Lord. I'm a little disappointed, Christy, because we have been out of the gross factor for quite some time. And, you know, it's time to bring it back and gross Glenn out. He's putting on weight because he's now able to eat lunch on Wednesdays. So we need to go ahead and we need to get some gross pussy abscesses or just muscle wasting tissue or something like that to make it gross next week.
Flesh eating bacteria?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah.
We can have fun. You know, we need to have this campaign. I was thinking about this the other day. I need to solicit some suggestions from our fans on Facebook. And maybe Jamie, you guys could do this too. What's the grossest thing we can talk about? And that way we can have lots of material for Glenn.
That's brilliant. Brilliant.
Oh, yeah,
okay, we'll have the listeners.
You're welcome,
yeah.
Glenn.
Anytime, Christy.
Well, you guys today are going to talk about you guys today are going to talk about picking good hay, and I know you have with you Bill Glisson, who's the owner of the Hay Exchange, and this is awesome because we're at the point, it's springtime, you got to start, they're going to start cutting hay soon. You need to know what to find and how to get it and what's the best one and what fits your horse. This is actually very appropriate timing. I know it's not gross, but it's good. So, Christy, why don't you go ahead and introduce Bill, unless I already did.
You did a little bit. Bill Glisson is the owner of the Hay Exchange. And, Bill, tell us a little bit about what you do at the Hay Exchange. By the way, Bill was highly recommended by Erin, who says that she's heard him speak for hours on hay without a single person getting bored, and he's awesome. So, Bill, tell us a little bit about you.
No pressure there, Bill.
Yeah, no pressure at all. Well, good morning. We'll start with that. And I'll also tell you thanks for having me, and I'm very grateful that I've made this week's topic as opposed to next week's potential flesh-eating bacteria. So maybe more fitting for me to talk about hay. I think, guys, what I'll do is I'll start and tell you how I got involved. Number one, I've been involved in feeding horses primarily my whole life. From either a feed standpoint and in the last 20-plus years from the forage side. But they do go hand in hand. And it's kind of interesting how I got involved in hay many, many years ago, working for a national feed manufacturer. I did a lot of speaking all across the country, and one of the most commonly asked questions was, I got a great feed store that supplies me with my product, or a local feed mill, or I'm really happy with my grain part of my diet, but where do I get good quality hay consistently? And so that consistently asked question, no matter if I was on the West Coast or Midwest or up in the Northeast or in the Southern states, that question was always asked. And so one day being a little aggravated with corporate America and flying on a plane from coast to coast, I decided that I'd be the answer to that question, at least to some people. So that's how I got started.
And talk to us a little bit about some of the different types of hay that are out there. And part of the reason, I know that's kind of a basic question, but I know when I grew up just riding down at the boarding barn down the street, didn't even think about hay. It was in the hay barn, we fed it, didn't really think a lot about different types of hay. So maybe not everybody knows all of what's out there, people in a similar situation.
You bet, Christy. There's two types of forages. There's grass forages and there's legume forages, and I'll touch on the difference between those two and how they may apply. But there's also, that's probably the greatest impact on feeders, is there's local hay and our domestic hay, and then there's imported hay. And by using the term import, I don't necessarily mean we bring it in from out of country. However, we could bring it from Canada into the U.S., which is often done. But it could be that the simple fact that you live in a geographical region that doesn't grow the type of hay that's maybe your personal preference to feed, and so we refer to that as an import. So, growing up, I think it depends if we grew up in a show barn or maybe just in a backyard operation. And, you know, feeding hay is basically the personal preference of the horse owner. I believe in this fact that you can feed whatever forage you want, but you should consider a consistent supply and some quality factors about it. Let's talk just a second about grass hays versus legume hays.
I think that's good.
Christy, for example, in Texas there's a lot of Bermuda forages grown. There's a lot of different varieties of Bermuda grass, some standard varieties as well as some new hybrid varieties that's improved digestibility and feed value. And then, of course, you've got the most popular grass forage of all is probably Timothy. And there's many more that have been developed since then. You have Timothy, Orchard, Brome, and these varieties of Bermuda, as well as some new hybrid forages that's being tested by universities around the state and the country. And I refer to those grass forages as a good fiber forage. And the reason for that, grass forages are fiber. There's less feed value and a lot of fiber value as opposed to your legumes, which would be your second classifications, which the most popular legume would be, of course, alfalfa. And then you have clover hays. In the south, they've developed a perennial peanut hay. And so there's also a selection of legumes hay, and I refer to those as the fuel forages, meaning that there's more protein and energy in those forages than the grass. So there's the major differences that even the most novice feeders should
have. I got to ask about that, though. You said peanut hay. Is that really hay from peanuts, like peanuts?
Very good question. You know, for many, many years...
Is there peanuts on the bottom so you can feed your elephant and your horse at the same time, or your mini giraffe?
Your mini giraffe, exactly.
Good thought. But no, it's not.
Oh, darn.
You know, for years they've baled the tops of peanuts and fed them to cows, so it's a real coarse fiber. I'm going to give credit, I believe, to the University of Georgia, who's developed a perennial peanut that's just a derivative of that peanut bush. And it's a very highly digestible, high-energy, high-protein forage for the South, since they can't produce alfalfa commercially.
So it's a real high-end protein type of thing.
Absolutely. Yep.
Green as green could be.
Does color go.
Where's color come into play when you're dealing with hay? There's a horse husband question for you. Because I always tried to judge by color, and then Jennifer always got mad at me because I always liked the really bright green ones, and our horse has to wear a muzzle, so I wasn't allowed to feed any of the bright green stuff. Is color, is that something you really do look at when you're looking at hay?
Well, most people do, and I got to tell you, we should also understand this, that the forage represents over 50% of the cost in feeding a horse, but yet it's the only product we buy that does not have a nutritional profile attached to the product itself, like a bag of feed, for example. And so, unfortunately, people they buy it based on their perceived value, which a lot of it has to do with color. You know, the old adage, the grass is always greener on the other side, is – never made anybody any more money than hay dealers, because they'll sell green hay for more money than they would hay that's not quite so green. Is it relevant? You bet. In some cases, it's simply an outward way of measuring, was it harvested and cured properly? But I got to tell you, let's use alfalfa, for example. Alfalfa with a little sun bleach can be just as nutritionally prolific as a pea green hay that's perfect in color, but yet could save a feeder or commercial producer $40 or $50 a ton. So there's definitely more that we should evaluate a bale of hay than color alone.
Okay, so when you've got your hay bale, because I have to feed some alfalfa here. I'm in Phoenix, and like you said, it's kind of hard to find any other kind of hay out here. It's very prevalent, but I feed a grass hay, and then I also feed the alfalfa. But I was always concerned about the edge of the alfalfa bale, because that's the one, I guess, was turned up to the sun, and when it was stacked, it was on the sunny side. So it's always a completely bleached out part of the hay bale. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, when you've got the four sides, one side is always white because it's been seeing the sun, but you're saying that it still could be very nutritional?
Absolutely. Now, it obviously depends on how long it may have been exposed to weather elements other than just sun, but it's interesting how you commented that it's almost white, it's so sun bleached. There's a direct relevancy that the lighter the color of the bleach usually is a representative of the higher quality of the hay. But by no means is sun bleach a reflection of the decrease in quality.
That's good to know, because I was always trying to sort through and not pick those pieces out.
Well, you know,
so.
And if I heard of that, we deal with it every day. Anybody that's in the hay business deals with it every day. And you know what the fact is? 20% of any stack of hay is going to have external bleach, just because 90% of the growers do not put their hay and store it in a completely enclosed barn. So even under a shed, it will receive some sun bleach on the sides. Well, there's always those people, like your comment, I can't feed that, I must pick it off or not choose a bale of hay that has any at all. Those people simply charge the hay to go up a little higher, because a producer has to sell that pea green hay with no bleach that's in the middle of the stack for more money than the edges.
If
you want to talk about controlling cost in these economic times, you should evaluate that based on your cost per head per day to feed a horse, and you should educate yourself a little bit more about selecting the right hay and understanding how to interpret the quality of hay. And I believe you guys have accumulated some links and stuff that people can go to on some sites here and further educate themselves on buying hay. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have.
And I have a question too. All right, so I'm coming from the horse husband's point of view here, who, you know, we get two jobs. We get the show, you know, muck stalls and feed. That's what we're allowed to do. So my question is, when we're feeding, we're always taught to look for mold, and mold is obviously a curse of every horse person. But is there really a good way, you know? I can never tell. It's a little dusty, so I just called Jennifer over and say, is this moldy? Because the sniff test never worked for me. So is there a good way to tell if your hay is really moldy? You know, because sometimes it's just dusty, and it's just hard to tell.
Good points. And yeah, you need to start off by buying your hay from a reputable source.
Yeah, but even reputable sources, there can be crappy hay in the middle, you know?
No doubt. And there's no replacing an individual evaluating each flake of hay before they feed them. There's just no way. You need to have that last visual inspection. And if your sniffer don't work, because you're exactly right, in that Arizona market, there's a lot of dry days, a lot of windy days, and it'll blow some farm dirt and some dust into the hay mouths. And so the dust that may be in that hay is not mold spore dust, but just dust. And so when you flake that bale, shake it. If you get a little dust in the air, you should try and smell it and qualify it, and obviously look for the visible signs of mold and non-feeding hay.
Well, I really want, you know how the police have the breathalyzer tests? I really want a little gadget that horse husbands can use. We just stick it in the hay, and it says whether it's moldy or not.
Well, I just think we should work on that. It sounds like a
great
project.
Yeah, I think you should. I really do.
Yeah.
I would buy one of those.
Would you?
Like an internal meat thermometer kind of thing.
That's
where
right.
You stick it in, it's like,
a moldometer or something, maybe, huh?
A moldometer. That's
yes.
Perfect.
Okay,
get
so
on
we're
that.
All part-
the horse can make a fortune.
Absolutely. We're all partners on this deal.
Okay.
The molometer. That's almost like a miniature giraffe. That's great.
Miniature giraffes are real, Glenn. Miniature giraffes are real. Your mold meter is not real.
Well, I wanted to ask Bill another question about things that shouldn't be in hay besides mold. And there are a lot of weeds that can get baled into hay that can cause some problems, and things like blister beetles. I mean, where can people find out a little
and
bit
snakes.
More? What should they really watch
out
for?
We always used to get snakes in our hay. You'd open it up, and there'd
Ooh,
be a dead nice. Snake. That's really gross.
Tasty.
You know, and all those are factors that I don't know how we'll ever get away from, because the reality is hay is produced in a field, you know, with the help of Mother Nature, and it's not manufactured. And so, yeah, you'll have the occasional wildlife or animal or rodent or something like that baled. You just got to watch for it. It goes back to watching what you're feeding, because I don't know any way that we'll ever replace that.
So the recommendation would just be to pitch the flakes on either side of whatever dead critter you just found in your hay, right?
You know, nothing replaces common sense. And I'd hate to tell somebody to discard the whole bale. But in some cases, that may be necessary, right? I mean, if it's a skunk, you probably want to get rid of the whole bale. If it's an 8-inch grass snake, you probably a couple of flakes.
All right, that's the best. People on our Facebook page have been posting their best lines of the day. You get the best line of the day. Nothing
oh, is that right?
Nothing replaces common sense. Right there, best line of the day.
And then as my mama always said when she was cooking in the kitchen and she'd see something, she'd go, oh, if in doubt, throw it out.
Exactly.
Moms know,
the
don't
other
they?
That, and then the mama's other
moms always.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I disagree, and mamas always know.
They do, and mine used to sometimes say that common sense isn't always common.
That's true.
That becomes more relevant all the time, does it not?
It does. It does. Well,
is this the words.com segment or the bad quotes of the day segment? I'm not sure. It could be both.
It could be both. Today it could be both. Next week we can get into more gory things. But I did want to let everybody know, if you're worried at all about toxic plants in your hay, we do have an Ask the Vet live event on poisonous plants tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern with Dr. Anthony Knight, Colorado State, and Dr. Karen Bischoff of Cornell. So if you have any questions about that, we're going to be talking about toxic plants and pastures and hay and everything else for about an hour. And you can sign up on thehorse.com for that.
Great topic.
Yeah, I think
all
it's
right.
going to be fun. Dr. Knight, listen. Literally wrote the book on poisonous plants and animals, so I think it's going to be a great session.
But well, thank you both. Thank you, Bill, for joining us today and for coming up with our quote of the day. We really appreciate that. And, Christy, I'm just so looking forward to next week. I think it's going to be out Wednesday, actually. I got something. I'm going to come up with something, I'm sure.
You're feeling the Wednesday blue coming on?
Yeah, I'm feeling a little sick right now. I'm sure it's going to be really bad by next Wednesday. Well, thank you, guys. We appreciate it. And, of course, you can find all the information you ever want about horse health at thehorse.com. In addition to that, you can find lots of other good, cool stuff now, including all of our shows right there on your website. So we do appreciate that, too, Christy.
Well, we appreciate you providing such a great and entertaining look at everything in the horse world.
Yeah, entertaining. I'm not sure it's good, but it is entertaining. Bye, Christy.
Entertaining
bye, Bill.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye. So what's up there, Jamie?
Nothing. I'm not doing nothing. I just am on Facebook, and you know when you're on Facebook and people can just, like, see that you're there and they start chatting with you?
Yes.
I started chatting with – well, somebody started chatting with me, and I'm sorry, I totally missed the whole hay segment because I was doing a little zenyatta talk with – Charles? That's right,
you're on
ladies
the,
and gentlemen. Yes,
you're on chatting with Charles?
Yes, oh my God. Okay, be cool. My husband's awake. I'm not. It's
can
not cheating. I'll just talk to you. No, you. There's no way he will come on the air because he will get in so much trouble because Lane's End has told us that they are not allowed to talk interview-wise unless we book it through them. So we have to call Lane's End and see if we can talk to Charles, who's already talking to me right now on chat on Facebook. So anyway.
Is it good dirt on Zenyatta?
No, there's no dirt. He just I said, he wrote, "How are things going?" And I said, "I'm doing a show right now. How are you?" And he just said that they're really disappointed with the news, but that she'll go back to the breeding shed next week.
You
Yay!
Insiders.
Oh, I'm kind of a big deal, actually. So, so fun. Okay, I got to focus. I'll stop typing now.
Hey, some news out of the driving world again today. And, oh, by the way, remember Mike called yesterday? He's our driving correspondent from drivingnews.us. He called.
Yeah, the whole Oompa Loompa thing was related to that. Thank you very much. You said I'd look like an Oompa Loompa next to his son. Are you talking about that guy? Because I remember that very vividly. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, well, we got to see his son in the video. He sent us a link to the video of them turning over. And sure enough, his son did hit his head on a tree. I got to tell you, without a helmet on, he would have been in the hospital. He hit his head pretty good on the tree, and I'll post a link to the video on our Facebook page as well. But there was other news out of driving today, and a couple of years ago, one of Chester Weber's horses became Horse of the Year for the USEF, and that was 2008. And his horse's name was Jamaica, very pretty horse, Dutch warm blood, and he was retired at a ceremony at Live Oak over the weekend, and he'll be spending his life living in the 4,500-acre little estate there in Florida, just hanging out. So congratulations to a great driving career for Jamaica, who is now retired after being Horse of the Year in 2008. And you had a little less fun news for a very famous horse, didn't you?
I know, it's kind of sad, but, you know, after reading the story and the whole story, it actually makes you feel really good. Sapphire, of course, the most famous show jumping mare in, you know, the world. She's a big chestnut mare ridden by McLean Ward. He's taken her to two Olympics, gotten gold medals in 2004, 2008. He got it silver in the 2006 WEGs. Well, she is out for the rest of the season. I guess she was a couple days ago, suffered a strained check ligament. Now, this horse has been incredibly sound, I mean, for her career. So they're actually doing what is right. Not that, you know, McLean Ward wouldn't, but basically he said that the vet said it's going to take 3 to 6 months to heal. Well, he's like, you know what? We're giving her a year. We're not going to compete her for a year. And hopefully, you know, I just think that they're doing it right. And this is a quote that he said from McLean Ward. It says, quote, "As I've said before, if she never jumps another fence, she doesn't owe anyone anything. But I don't think she's quite ready to be done with the sport yet. We've been incredibly lucky with her soundness over the years. This has a lot to do with the people that take care of her." And again, my favorite quote, "She doesn't owe anyone anything." Oh, it just gives me a little goosebumps, so, you know, makes me a little emotional to hear a man talk about his horse like that. I just think it's so cool. So, you know, he was supposed to go to Germany with her and the World Cup finals and all this kind of stuff. So, good luck to him and whoever else he brings along. But yes, Sapphire is injured and will be out for a year.
Okay. Well, I wanted to mention a couple things, housekeeping things here from the Horse Radio Network, and that is Chris's Eventing Radio Show, the final wrap-up show from Southern Pines is out now. You can catch that at eventingradio.com. And we have the Western show came out yesterday. They had a very interesting show with again, I'm going to say this. It sounds like a broken record, and Alan, we give you this one. They win so freaking much money on the Western side. Just
I know. God.
So he had two of the winners. Remember the Houston Rodeo? Well, he had two of the winners on the Barrel Racer, $50,000. Team Roper there, $50,000 winners. So he had them on, and it was interesting hearing them chat about, you know. But one thing about them, though, especially the rodeo circuit like that, is they do spend their life in their trailer driving down the road. You know, they are never home. They are always out at rodeos every week and practicing their craft and doing their thing. So that Western show was out. Tack and Havoc came out. We had a fun show. This week, Helene and I talking about some different products. You're going to want to check that out. Also, you can find all of our shows, of course, at horseradionetwork.com. And, you know, we have a busy schedule coming up here on Horses in the Morning throughout the month of April. We have the special musical episode on the 8th. Jennifer and I are going next weekend. We're going to Equine Affair in Ohio. We're going to meet our friend Jackie there. We're going to try and see the Pfizer Fantasia on Friday night and talk to you all about that. Plus, a number of the clinicians that are going to be at the show next weekend are friends of the Horse Radio Network and Horses in the Morning. Reese Goffler Stanfield is going to be there, Cooking with Reese segment. Of course, we have our own team psychologist who's going to be there. And a bunch of others that we have met over the years are going to be there, so we're hoping to catch up with them. And then, of course, we have a very exciting – have you made your reservations and plans yet to come in here, Jamie, for Rolex?
Yeah, I've already got my plane ticket. I have my place to stay. I am lined up. I am lined up, and I will be doing a lot of zenyatta stalking, trying to get on the farm to go see her.
You're talking to the right guy, I think, to get that done right now. But so
listen,
Jamie's coming
that
in.
Has
we're
nothing
gonna...
to do. That has nothing to do with my chat. I swear. I promise. It's not. I'm not working an angle at all. Okay.
Well, we're going to be doing the Horses in the Morning show live. We'll be making an exception that week when it's the Rolex 3-day event here in Lexington, Kentucky, one of the biggest horse shows in the country. And we're going to be live Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday morning. All 4 days we'll be live on Horses in the Morning, so you can be able to catch us on a weekend, which is a little different, and then we'll be taking Monday and Tuesday off of that following week. So we'll be actually live for 7 days straight, right through Rolex, and then Chris will be doing the eventing radio show live every evening. And they're working out. We were chatting with the Rolex people yesterday. They're being very good. They're trying to get a spot where we can record the shows every day where people can come and watch. So we're trying to get that worked out. We can have our fans actually come over and watch, and maybe we'll have some hats to sign and things like that. So that should be a lot of fun. As we get closer to the date, we'll try and find out on Facebook who of our fans are attending, and definitely get to meet as many of them as we can.
Absolutely. I'm definitely looking forward to that. And, you know, there's just something special about being at Rolex, being at the Kentucky Horse Park in the morning, nice and early. You know, it's usually a little bit foggy over the grass, and there's dew on the grass, and it just smells and reeks of horses and just excitement and shopping, and it's just so fun. Everybody, if you have not been, you definitely have got to go to a Rolex, and no better time than the present.
That's
in
right.
My opinion.
And I'm sure Jamie and I will at some point get down to the tailgate area to say hi to everybody down there. And maybe, you know, maybe there'd be a little bit of alcohol involved. I'm not sure what goes on at the tailgate area, but we will investigate and report on that for you for sure, because tailgating's new at Rolex. So, you know, I think that's something that we should spend at least an afternoon covering, don't you?
I do. I think it would be an interesting walk. I must tell you that there will be no drinking for me until the last horse is finished cross country, because I need to focus. I like to watch. And if I get drunk, I get sleepy and stupid. So no drinking for me until the last horse is finished across the finish line. How about that? That's my rule.
Well, I'll cover for you there, okay?
Okay, I'll be leading you around. Well, you guys, if you missed the live show, you can listen to the recorded version on our website, affiliate websites, iTunes. If you're just joining us now, we had Larry Colmus, the race caller from Monmouth Park, on. You've got to go back and listen to that interview. The guy is awesome. He's hilarious. He was very funny. And, of course, you know, you never need to miss an episode. We'll be back tomorrow morning. What are we doing tomorrow on the show, by the way?
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe Jennifer knows.
Tomorrow, we've got Cowboy Chris on, who is doing ride across the country. Yeah.
Yeah, Cowboy Chris actually.
This is an awesome story.
Yeah, he is a cancer survivor, and he left from, I think, Dallas, Texas, and he's riding to New York City. He has four horses with him, and what he's doing is raising money all along the way for Heroes for Children Foundation. And Jennifer managed to catch up with him yesterday. I think he's in Tennessee. And he's going to come on the show with us, and we're hoping to get him on a regular basis as he makes his quest up the country to New York City, and I think he's raised almost like $2,000 already for kids with cancer, and just a great story. I can't wait to talk to him tomorrow. And, of course,
yeah,
Thursdays now are our Chronicle Report, now the Thursday Chronicle Report, because we changed things up a little bit. Well,
yeah, she was
going to
quit. She was tired of dealing with us on Fridays.
I know.
But
we had to change it to save her.
Everybody remember, too, send us your really bad horse sale ads, Craigslist ads. You can win a prize. You can win some, spur suaders. And it's going to be good. So Friday, definitely don't want to miss that one. So everybody, enjoy your day. Stay warm and dry there in Lexington, Kentucky. And say goodbye, Glenn.
Goodbye, everybody. Wear your helmets and have a terrific horse-filled day.